Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. We're rolling all the way until, let's see here, 3 o'clock. Lord, have mercy. Lots to do on the show today. Some of it will be silly. Some of it will be sublime. And thanks to all of the folks in Oak Brook. Boy, we had a nice time yesterday at the Oak Brook Terrace Pinstripes location. Big crowd out there, really good food, really swell beverages. Everybody was very nice. And so thank you for making our Allstate Hometown Voices tour stop so much fun. Judy Pilak from the newsroom is in our studio, as she was just a couple of days ago. Hi, Judy.
Hello, John.
One man's desperate quest to actually see, touch, and feel the Cubs World Series rings. Now in day 4. Judy's son, you may have been hearing, works for the Chicago Cubs as a seasonal employee. What does he do for the Cubs again?
He's in facilities.
So we're so excited. Right. He helps set up the stadium for each game, turning on lights, moving things around, whatnot. So he works how many, like 80 games a year or something like that?
He pretty much works almost every home game.
Yeah, right. So 80
and
some
concerts
days
at
here.
The field.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
I know.
So even those sorts of people get World Series championship rings, a lower tier, not 108 diamonds. And so we've been following that story all week long, right? Not only the distribution of them, what do they look like, but then the letter the Cubs set out saying don't share this or sell it with anybody, et cetera. Anyway, Judy was going to bring the ring in today. Okay, Judy, let's see that
ring.
But
you know what? He wouldn't put a ring on it.
What happened? Where is
my
the ring?
My own son is was hesitating to let me bring that ring in to show you.
Why?
I don't know. So I said, hey, I have an idea. Why don't you just come in? John would love to see you, talk to you. You can show the ring off. He was literally at the train station this morning. Now, I should tell you, he had already emailed the – he'd already asked the supervisor about it because he does work here part-time as well at WGN. He does video.
Okay.
Editing. He's an animation major.
Got it.
So the Cubs is a really good job, I think, for him. Anyway, if he can do the animation there, I'd be really happy. Anyway, he had asked his boss, he didn't get back to him, so he emailed him the other day, just checking again. Some of my associates at WGN would like to talk to me, and they got back to him right as he was at the train station and said, could you just respectfully decline? Because we are asking all of our associates across the organization not to do interviews about
that. Boy, I don't get that.
I knew you wouldn't. But I have to tell you that my son Conlin is okay with it.
So now, at least, well, God bless him, right? He is respecting the rule and the order.
Absolutely. He has no problem with not coming in and showing off that ring.
Did you explain to him the mortgage rule?
I did.
I went over the mortgage rule with you people yesterday. What you do when your kids aren't doing what you need them to do, you just get out that little thing and you go, hey, look, this is called a mortgage. Mommy owns the house you live in. Let's see if your name's... Oh, your name's not on here.
Yes. And his response was, do I have a job at Wrigley Field? Oh, yes, I do. Do I make my... Oh, right. And I said, okay.
So this is his ring. Right. You didn't steal it.
It's his ring. It's his decision.
How does it work?
I will get that ring one day. I will. I'm telling you, not today.
How old is this person that lives with you?
He's 23. Just turned 23 yesterday.
Okay. And so how does the ring look?
It looks good. Let me just tell you. I woke him up yesterday because it was his birthday, and even though he's 23, I always like to do a little decorating at the house for my kids for their birthday. I woke him up to just say, here's a little card and happy birthday, and he came out of his room with his hair looking all tousled, and he was still in his pajamas, and the ring was on his finger.
Well, sure it was.
I said, Conlin, did you sleep with that ring? And he said, no, I woke up and put it on.
That's what I do now. I get dressed.
It's hilarious.
Comb my hair, brush my teeth, put on my World Series championship ring.
Yes. And that then, is really a big deal to him.
And then don't give it to my mom.
Right. And so, you know what? It's still too new.
Is it ever going to come into the station?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, Conlin will be here on Tuesday. You could see it.
Okay.
I don't know that he will. I do know he will not come on your show and talk about it. But
right, because the Cubs asked him not to, because, Lord, you don't want people talking about how happy they are to be associated with the Cubs.
I know, that is kind of weird. But
that, I could see if he worked for the Blackhawks today. I don't know. That's a kind of a down day over there. But the Cubs should be thumbs up, everybody.
Right, I know. But I will say, having seen the email, that they said, you know what, we don't want to put people in a position to answer questions that they may be uncomfortable with,
fair,
or
that's
not
fair,
know the answer to.
Right.
And that is fair.
I get that. Yeah. So here's a part-time kid, and he's talking to some snarky talk show host about, well, what's this with the Cubs? You're a representative of the organization. Why are they doing this?
Absolutely. So I'm so happy that you're so considerate, John.
Oh, I am not mad at because
me.
To me, then the answer to that is, yeah, but this is WGN. It's John Williams. It's Judy Pye. That's a very safe harbor for this conversation.
Yes, yes, but maybe not everywhere. And, you know,
okay, well, I'm not actually sure that you have a son, and I don't know.
But there when is I wear that ring, because I'll get it eventually, and yeah, it looks really good on me. It looks really good.
It's not the 108 diamonds. You showed it to me. It's a white C with what looked like some red sapphires around it.
Yes,
is that what those are?
Making the letter C, and then there is a diamond on the side.
Oh, that's nice.
Actually, three diamonds, like a little field, like a diamond.
Good.
And then there's the field etched
baseball
on the side,
field,
and
yeah,
then the W flag. And I mean, it's really, really nice.
Thoughtfully done, huh?
Yes.
Well, good. If we ever see it, I'll be able to comment.
You'll
on it.
See it. You'll see
I
it.
I don't even think you've got a son, and I don't know that person, I don't even know that there's a Cubs.
You are going to feel so bad when I prove you wrong.
All right, Judy, get out of the studio.
Thanks, John.
We'll do some news. That's Judy Pylak. Kind of broke my heart. We had the song already. If you like, you put a ring on it. So this is a story that I started to mention yesterday when we were at Pinstripes, and it was in the Chicago Sun Crimes. It's Sneed's exclusive ticket punch. Listen to this. According to the Chicago Police Department, statistics obtained by Sneed that there were only 168 traffic citations for improper use of mobile devices in 2016. In 2014, the city of Chicago wrote 45,000 tickets for texting while driving. And I believe that. That sounds about right. Big city, everybody's doing it. It's just like shooting fish in a barrel. You got everybody out there, and if you want to write some tickets, you can get 45,000 of them. Chicago did 2 years ago. Last year, 2016, how many tickets did they write for texting while driving? Not 45,000. They wrote 168. 168. What is that all about? That has to be a clerical error. It has to be 168,000 or something. Bob, I can't believe that it's only 168.
That is unbelievable.
I could take 168 calls, I thought, from people who have received tickets for texting while driving.
You could have someone counting the people who pass by your studio between now and
amazing.
The end of your show.
I don't know. Maybe the cops just don't want to be bothered with it. They've got bigger fish to fry. Yeah. I'm not even sure that they do need to be writing that many tickets for texting while driving, because I don't think it's going to have any impact on people's behavior. But this might. So now, another story in the Sun Crimes yesterday. This is the Franz Spielman story. They are considering using the textilizer. The textilizer is something that's being developed, and I don't know that it's actually in widespread use or maybe even in any use across the country today. But it would work like this. We suspect that you are in a crash or that you are texting while driving. We finally pull you over, and then we take your phone and plug it into a device that will tell us what was happening on your phone at a given time. So if the cop sees you swerving and then he finally pulls you over, he'll note that you did that at 1:17, and then he'll take your phone and he'll see, aha, look, there is a text at 1:17. It's called the textilizer. Works like a breathalyzer. We pull you over. We suspect you're driving under the influence. We make you blow into a thing. We get your blood alcohol level. We're doing the same with your cell phone now. The
You're
ACLU
in favor of this?
I don't know. I don't know. Here's why I'm not in favor of it. I mean, I get why that would work, and I get the value of that. Some people are worried now that what you're literally doing is saying to the cops, and they say, don't worry, we're not going to read your messages. We're just going to see when and how it was being used. But isn't that a slippery slope, right?
It is a bit slippery.
And here's my problem with it. There are times where I've thought about this. I've looked at my phone, I'm driving, and then 30 seconds or a minute later, while I'm not looking at my phone or driving, I encounter a situation that maybe, you know, somebody ran a stop sign, but I stopped in time. There was no crash. But, you know, something happened that could have gone the other way. And I thought, wow, if I was just now in a fender bender or got a ticket for running a red light or something, they would look at my phone and say, well, 30 seconds, look at that. It was like right prior to this thing, your phone was active. But in fact, and you know this because this happens to you, you have looked at your phone, you've put it down, and nothing bad happened. It was not a distraction for you for that thing that then happened later or that almost happened later. But they're going to falsely convict you of being distracted when you weren't.
I see where you're going.
That's, I think, the big problem. They're going to say, aha, your thing here was at 1:19:46, and we can tell by your phone that at 1:18:45, your phone was operational or doing something. And you go, yeah, well, that was a minute ago. A minute later, I was not distracted by that. And you can just see that in the paper playing out where people go, oh, give me a break, really? He was using his phone, he was using his phone, he was using his phone. But you were not distracted at the point of impact or the point of almost impact. So that's, to me, the sort of Achilles heel of this gadget. It's called the Textilizer. I just wonder what you think about this. My number is 312-981-7200. We'll start with Joe. Hey, Joe, you're on the air. What's your thought?
Hi, John.
Hey.
I heard this on the news this morning, but they also said that if the person that has the phone doesn't want to give it to the cop to plug it in, they don't have to.
Right.
So it's just like not taking a breathalyzer test. They have to have a penalty for them not giving it up.
Right. I'm aware of that, and I don't love that provision either. I mean, now you're going to get in trouble for not handing over your phone.
Right. But, I mean, if you're out texting, you're creating a dangerous situation not only for you but for others as well. So somebody has to take responsibility somewhere.
All right, when I get to be king, I'm going to make you the czar of distracted driving, Joe. Are you going to use the Textilizer?
If I got caught, I would. I mean, if I got caught doing it, I'd probably just admit to it.
Hand over the phone, and you think
right.
And you think the police should use this though? You like this gadget for the cops?
I honestly, they need to do something because I work in the streets all day,
yeah.
And I see people not paying attention. Constantly.
It's amazing.
That number you read out about their tickets, if they're not giving them out, then they've given up.
It's the strangest thing. 45,000 2 years ago, and then the last full year, 168? Are you kidding me? That's insane.
They could support the school system if they would actually enforce these laws.
How about that? Hey, I appreciate your call, Joe. Thanks for jumping in here.
Okay, John.
Have a
Bye.
Good day. You betcha. It's 122-312-981-7200. John Williams here. This is WGN. Joanne wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, King John.
Hey.
I'm
Breaker, breaker. Come on, Joanne. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So my question is, what if you have Bluetooth audio and you text through that?
Yeah.
How are they going to distinguish?
I don't know. Maybe the gadget will know. But, yeah, if you're talking to text, that maybe doesn't qualify as distracted driving, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. They don't have it yet. To be honest with you, I think texting while driving and using a Bluetooth are morally about the same thing. Studies have shown, nobody believes me when I say this, but studies show that the real distraction isn't your eyeballs, it's your brain. And so if you're using Bluetooth technology, if you're talking to somebody on the phone, or if you are wirelessly texting, voice to text, which, by the way, is one of the greatest inventions of all time, voice to text. It's amazing, isn't it? But you're distracted because of that. It's not that you can't see, although that doesn't help when you're looking down at your phone, but you're distracted when you are having a conversation with somebody that's not in the car. Your brain goes there. You're distracted. I think if you're going to do one, you have to do the other. Bob's on the air. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John, welcome back.
Nice of you to say that. What can I do for you?
Well, I was just going to say it's hard enough for me to text.
Period.
Period. But I wouldn't even think about texting while I'm driving.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I, you know, I drive all over the place, and I just see so many people texting, and it just blows my mind. But
it's amazing. Anyway. It's amazing. It's, you know, and it, they say it's like drunk driving. It's like driving while drinking. It's not, but it's not, because we still do it. Mostly we don't. We sure cut back on our drinking and driving. We aren't cutting back on this. We're still doing it. It's stunning, the difference between the two.
I saw an accident once at an intersection. It was Milwaukee and Armitage. And clearly it was not late at night or anything, and someone was just sitting waiting to turn left. They had a red light, and someone just drove into them as though they weren't there. And sure it was because of texting.
Because
that was the only logical explanation.
Right, unless they just wanted, hey, I think I'll T-bone somebody today.
It was
that clear, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Just a couple more quick calls. Bob, thanks for the call. Joe, jump in there. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hello?
Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Thank you, John. Texting is crazy. I live in Rockford, and no matter where you go, they're out there on the interstate, in the city, sitting at a stoplight, walking across the street with their children against the light, texting.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. And the other thing now that I find out, and I believe it's honestly happening, is that the police are starting to build a portfolio on any individual. I got stopped twice, supposedly for swerving, at 11:15 at night, nobody coming my way, nobody going my way, no police on the street, no other cars on the street. All of a sudden, the car pulls up behind me and turns on his dome. And he pulled me over and he said, "You were swerving." I can't deny it. Then 3 weeks later, this last week, it happened again in a different area, block away from my house, and I couldn't believe that I swerved. I went back the next day and found out why I swerved. There's a dip in the road on the right side, and when you go in a dip, it pulls you to the right. So to right yourself going the right way, you have to pull up. So I got another ticket there. I got a warning, but I got two warnings now. And it's just as bad as baseball with the bases loaded. Three strikes, you're out.
Huh.
So I can't believe it, but, and I can understand, you can see things that are happening. Whenever they bring up something that happens with somebody on in the news, they have a dossier on them of what they did and how they did it and so on.
That's the problem. Go ahead, Joe, finish that thought.
Maybe they're not wrong, but at least they're getting it. And I just can't believe it. I'm only 78 years old. I drive smart, and I just can't believe it. You can't debate with them, but they got tools that we ourselves could buy to show that we're driving straight, or we're doing this, or we're doing that.
Well, I'm not comfortable handing my phone over to the cops in the situation like they're talking about with this textilizer thing. And I don't think this is easily solved. Joe, I appreciate the phone call. I'm out of time. It's 1:31. We got to get into the newsroom. That's next on WGN. Thank you, Bob. It's Sean Williams here. It's 1:41. Tulips are coming up real nice in the planters downtown Chicago. I noticed something new this year, too. Maybe they did this last year. I haven't been downtown for a couple of springs, but you know how they have the big planters and people love going down Michigan Avenue and State Street, too, and seeing the planters.
Getting their wedding photos.
Oh, it's just lovely. It's just, I'm telling you, it's one of the things that makes this city great. I know some people roll their eyes at that, but I'm sorry, it works. But so along the sidewalk on Michigan Avenue, they have the plants, the flowers planted right into the cement. You know, they're not on raised platforms. I mean, your dog could pee on them if he happened to be there. They're right there on the ground.
We could tiptoe through them.
I know. And I think, oh, that's cool and different and lovely. But I'm also worried because I think, oh, that's not going to last a week. People are just going to destroy those. But they're right there on the ground coming through the cement. It's kind of different. And boy, a real experiment here for us if we don't have any track record on this, because I'm betting against the flowers making it to the 1st of June. We'll see how that goes. with all due swiftness, I guess, the judges have said that Rod Blagojevich has to stay in jail for the rest of his term. I believe he has the Supreme Court as a last option, but that doesn't sound likely. No break for him, right?
That's right.
Right, Bob? Yeah.
Took him 3 days to figure that out.
And it was the same guys, though, that put him in there to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's not like anything has changed for them. They're like, yeah, not so much. Go back to jail. We've had a conversation about that earlier this week, and a lot of you felt that his sentence was pretty harsh. I talked to Eric Zorn about that in our Mincing Rascals podcast, which you'll hear broadcast tomorrow, and you can listen to it right now. And he felt that it was severe as well. There's no reason to have a pity party for him. He brought it upon himself. But if he just stopped and thought about it, I think that the sentence that Blagojevich got did not fit the crime. Whatever. There he's in jail. That's his problem. But we actually do have the audio of the judges discussing Blagojevich's fate.
Did you think Rod was a good project manager?
No, I don't. I think he was a poor project manager.
Governor, go ahead, respond.
Yeah, let me ask a couple things. Number one, the Harry Potter thing's pretty self-explanatory. And if you're working for your team, and yeah, there's some creative tension between a creative guy like him and Brett. My feeling was he didn't work as hard. He didn't work as hard for Brett or give his best efforts for the team because Brett was the guy in charge for the creative design stuff. Now, again, I had veto power.
Michael, why are you smiling?
Because every time I've come in here, you ask me a question, who was weakest, who should I give you an answer? He wasn't given any answers. Everyone was great earlier. Everyone was great all of this time. And now all of a sudden, ass on the line.
No.
Start throwing people under the bus.
No, I think Curtis is
so
a guy with
that
real...
sounds like to me you're making things up. All of a sudden now Curtis didn't work as hard.
No,
that just doesn't
I didn't
make
say
any
that.
Sense to me.
I didn't say that. When they don't know the product.
Well, you did actually sort of say
Well, I suggested that...
I think you did say it, not sort of, right?
Well, I believe what I said was he had a feeling that he wasn't getting direction from the deputy in charge on the ground while I was gone. And never brought it to my attention, and I constantly called before I was on planes and other things to get a sense
okay,
of
but
what
listen,
I needed to
do. I just want to ask this one question. Your Harry Potter facts were not accurate. Who did the research?
There was not a specific direction to do the research on Harry Potter, but the inability to learn the product, and there was an issue in the...
Was that their inability or your inability?
I suppose I should have directed everybody else to learn the product. I will say that's sort of an axiomatic thing that you might want to do as you understand what the challenge is. I thought convey to them what the challenge was, what we should do, collaborate with them over the phone with the limitations having the other project manager.
Yeah, but you
there.
Went to Orlando to right. learn about Harry Potter. Nobody right. else did. So wouldn't you have been the one to know the product and learn the product?
I feel like I knew the product. In fact, I wrote a lot of the text. You know, I talked about the different houses, and I was the one who said houses and classes interchangeably because I was trying to be more explicit so people can get a concept of it. But it's Slytherin and it's Hufflepuff and it's Ravencloth and it's...
So are you responsible?
I think we did not win. But I think if you were looking at this like a baseball team, we're making progress. I believe some of our talent...
Yeah, but you're making progress and you're running out of people.
Understand?
You know, you're right. doing wonderfully. Everything's great, but you keep losing and you're running out of people.
Right.
And you're the project manager.
Right. I know.
And Governor, I have great respect for you.
Uh-oh.
I have great respect for your tenacity,
for
the fact that you just don't give up. But Rod, you're fired.
So that's how that ended.
Like talking to a 4-year-old. What did I tell you? Not to do that. What'd you do? I did that.
Whose fault was it? Well, it's not my fault. I don't know what's more delicious or horrifying, that the one guy was the governor of Illinois or that the other guy is now the president of the United States.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's one to ponder, John.
That's why I think the big thoughts, so you don't have to. There's your quandary. Donald Trump is very good at that. He is really good at that. That show made whether or not Rod Blagojevich did adequate research on Harry Potter seem important. It, with the music and the wah, tension building. And then what's going to happen? And you think, oh my God, they're really going to cut the governor's head off. They're going to execute him right here on the... No, he's going to get kicked off the show. That's all. He's going to go to jail, but he's going to just get kicked off the show. That's all. But the tension in that room... And Trump was so good at that. The president of the United States now, then as a talk show host, could say things like, your Harry Potter facts were not accurate. Who did the research? And you suddenly felt like, holy cow, who did the research? If Trump doesn't finish this term or doesn't get elected to a second term, President Trump, pardon me, he should go back to doing that because he's got chops for that. Not so sure about this whole having a Navy thing, but busting on former governors about did they do good Harry Potter research? He owned that room.
Former governors and what? Former 70s sitcom stars.
And rockers.
Yeah.
Athletes.
He was good at that. Ronald Reagan was good in his movies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you want to take anything away from some of their natural talents. Here again, Trump said that President Trump said that the 100-day marker is arbitrary. And I guess it kind of is, but there it is. And he tweeted today, despite the fact that that's arbitrary and ridiculous, he's been doing terrific things. And maybe he will. I actually don't think that what the job of president requires is really in his toolbox. But, you know, wish him the best. He's our president. Hopefully he'll figure it out. It's 1:49 on WGN. There was a, where did I put that story here? A friend of mine sent this to me. Listen to this. Clemson University had a slideshow that they presented to administration and staff about cultural sensitivity. And the upshot is this, that if you, in this slide presentation, you had like three groups. Have you ever done these corporate training little videos you're supposed to watch? Bob and Marianne are talking about Lois in accounting. Lois has an attractive dress on today. Bob says to Marianne, wow, look at Lois. You know, it's one of those things. And then the question comes up on the screen. Was Bob out of line? What are good choices for Marianne in this situation? It's one of those things. So they were doing one of these at Clemson, and it was about cultural sensitivity and training. And one group shows up for the meeting in this little slide presentation on time. The other one shows up early, and the other one, which is populated with people of color, shows up late. And then they say, Alejandro says, let me see if I get the quote here. One slide features a guy named Alejandro who plans a meeting between two groups. Each group contains foreign professors and students. One group shows up 15 minutes early. The second group shows up 10 minutes late. A question and answer section instructs the professors at Clemson that Alejandro would be insufficiently inclusive if he were to politely ask the second group to apologize. It would be wrong for him to say, hey, you guys, the meeting started at 9. You showed up late. That would be insufficiently inclusive. You need to bring these foreign professors into the fold, and rather than criticize them for showing up late, you should just accept the fact that there are cultural differences. And so if you say, and here's a quote from the slide presentation, in our country, 9 a.m. means 9 a.m., you would be wrong to say that to the people that showed up 10 minutes late for the meeting.
I don't think that that's insufficiently inclusive. I think that everything would be so disorganized if you could just show up whenever you were accustomed to showing up.
I guess what it begs, though, Elif, is in some cultures, is being 10 minutes late not a big deal? And so is that them not disrespecting you, but rather them operating on what they would consider to be their norm? And even if that's the case, and by the way, I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, we've heard of BPT before. You know, there are some people who just don't seem to get to things on time. But even if that's the case, say you're going to give them a pass because these people historically or culturally don't show up on time, do you then just throw up your hands and accommodate that? Or should you bust them for, here we got to do it. You are the one that has to change, not us. That's the question. Who's supposed to change? Who's supposed to change? Them, says producer Elif. What do you say? My number is 312-981-7200. This was at Clemson. This wasn't at some other country, planet, or far-flung place. It's a major American publicly funded university. It's 152 on WGN. Let's jump in with Dan. You're on WGN. What did you say about that story, Dan?
Yeah, well, how does the expression go, John? When in Rome, do as the Romans.
Yeah.
It doesn't say do as you please. I know in some South American countries it's a norm to take an afternoon siesta.
Yeah.
Does that mean when you get a job in the U.S. you can take an afternoon siesta and show up at 2 p.m.? I don't think so.
I like your answer to that question. Thank you, Dan. Teresa, you're on WGN. What do you say?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I think it's rude to be late when you're told to be at a certain place at a certain time. In my culture, it's the norm to show up a little late, and I find it to be rude.
What culture is that, Teresa?
I am from the Hispanic culture.
Yeah. Really, because I know African-Americans don't find it rude when they show up to events late. Hispanics are the same way, too?
I believe they are. I mean, I know when I have functions, it's weird to say, but there are times we sit around and as we're preparing for a function, should we invite people? If we want them here at 1, maybe we should say 12, and they'll show up on time.
I know we're painting with a broad brush here, but I get your point. Teresa, thanks for the phone call.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
Mr. President, it is necessary to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless,
Lord have mercy,
distinguishable post-war environments.
Now, what are they talking about there? I know what that was about. Bob Kessler named the movie from which that cut comes.
Dr. Strangelove.
Ding, 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 ding. There's a certain number of us who absolutely know that. That's one of my all-time favorite movies. I've been to one World's Fair, a picnic, and a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of headphones. I can quote a lot of lines from that
sure
movie.
Can.
Yeah.
Was that Slim Pickens?
Yep. Ding, ding, ding. And I was just thinking about that movie when I saw the story that the Russians are flying more and more planes off the Alaska coast. They're just picking on us. They're just sort of flicking our ear. If an Air Force could flick another Air Force's ear, that's what's happening right now. They're just going, come on, boink. Come on, boink. You want some of this, boink. That's what Russia's doing.
Yeah, I've been watching the show The Americans, so that's what.
Oh, my wife is into that. Is that pretty awesome? I haven't seen it yet.
It's awesome. It's actually not really about espionage. It's about sex.
Like all good cable things.
Yeah.
It's like this really good show about women in prison, or it's this really good show about drugs or something. Actually, the show about drugs was about drugs, but they do get in their sex.
Well, this one they do.
Game of Thrones. Oh, Lord. They have gratuitous sex
scenes.
Known
for that, yeah.
Or at least they did for a while.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call The Americans gratuitous. I actually think the show is an examination of sex.
No kidding, really.
Yeah,
the Americans.
I really do. I
got to talk to Brenda about
smart
that.
That way.
I was asking Brenda. I said, that really good show. She said, yeah, I really like it. She didn't tell me about this part.
Oh, every 5 minutes.
We're watching different TVs.
Sex always equals, in that show, someone's trying to get information from the other person, so they have sex with them. And I can think of one scene where the sex was genuine between the two people who were like, you know.
You mean where they were affectionate?
It was love.
Yeah, making love.
It wasn't
love.
Like I'm trying to find something out.
Wow. Because I'm downstairs watching the Blackhawks, and that's depressing. Brenda's riveted to the other TV set.
Yep. Huh.
You know, in Game of Thrones, when you have to tell a story, when you have to move the narrative along, that's called exposition. And sometimes stories will develop that way, where you go, all right, this isn't the most intriguing part of the show, but we'll go ahead and let them talk, explain, so we can get to the next awesome thing. In Game of Thrones, they had a phrase, they called it sexposition. And that is, they would do the exposition while they were in one of the bathhouses and all kinds of carnal things were going on. Or they were laying in a bed and it was this sort of orgy scene. That would be the sexposition. I mean,
or
if you get
sexpository dialogue, is there?
Okay, back. Getting back to Russia's bombers and the flicking of our Air Force's ears, this from CNN, Dateline Earth, Russian military aircraft were spotted flying off the coast of Alaska for the fourth time in as many days. A U.S. defense official told CNN today. The two most recent sightings occurred late Wednesday and Thursday. Russian aircraft never entered U.S. airspace, but the North American Aerospace Defense Command did, in fact, dispatch some U.S. F-22s. We got the Canadians up there with the CF-18s to perform intercepts. Nobody fired at anybody, but they're all just flying along saying, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, what you got? CNN says while these flights pose no real military threat, U.S. defense officials are taking notice of the high frequency at which they've occurred. Quote, there is no other way to interpret this than as strategic messaging, an official told CNN. So we reached out to Joel Ostro again. He is a professor of political science at Benedictine University. He's our Russian expert. He's going to explain some of this to us. And maybe it's not a long conversation we need to have, Joel, because I suspect there really isn't that much to it, right?
Well, good afternoon, John, and
welcome back.
Thanks for having me on
again. You betcha. Nice to hear you.
Well, I can tell you it has nothing to do with sex, since unless in some weird way the compromising materials on Trump that came out in the fall are somehow relevant again. And,
right.
And that's just a little disgusting.
That's them holding up the pictures in the window going, yeah. Look what we got. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of that.
You described it right as sort of flicking the U.S.
Yeah,
flicking us.
Yeah.
But is it more than messaging? I think that might, if it were just messaging, I'm not sure that we would also be scrambling fighters and sort of escorting them on their path. We wouldn't say out of U.S. airspace because there's no report that Russian fighters have entered U.S. airspace yet, but... You know, and this is the kind of thing that was normal during the Cold War, the sort of cat and mouse games that we would fly near Russian or near Soviet at that time airspace, and they would fly near ours, and we'd measure each other's responses and try and gain some information on capabilities, whether radar capabilities or airplane capabilities or communication capabilities, and, you know, it was a daily occurrence then.
Why do you think they're doing it now?
I think there are... It is certainly not a coincidence. So that the notion of messaging is relevant in the sense that this follows on the heels of a number of incidents, including what we talked about the last time, the U.S. launch of cruise missiles against a base in Syria in response to the chemical weapons attack. And that was a base where there were many, you know, Russian personnel nearby. There's other areas of instability of strategic importance, whether we're talking about North Korea or, again, the U.S. is talking about the Iran nuclear accords. And this is, I'm sure, Russia trying to gauge, the U.S. response to get some information on whether we notice, how we notice, what we do in the face of the fact that, as I've said before, our own administration to others looks to be spasmodic, inconsistent, unpredictable. So we can also interpret this as the Kremlin trying to gain a measure of information to help them predict, engage our responses in relation to their own actions.
Well, if somebody was gaining strategic information, like here's how sophisticated their radars are, or here's how quickly they can get a plane to intercept our bomber, I get that. I never thought about that. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's what it is, and then fine. Everybody wins, or at least there's some sense to it. That's what I want, is some logic, some sense to it. Because what I more get the feeling, Joel, is that this is just a bunch of 12-year-old boys running two of the nuclear powers, and one of them is sort of teasing the other. And then, but the upshot is that the thing spirals upward then. Then we tweet more hostile rhetoric, and then they say more hostile things. And that kind of language isn't just schoolyard. It has consequences. You can see the world sort of tightening its stomach over this sort of thing, you know?
Well, as we discussed before, it would be wrong to look at any one of these events in isolation, whether it's the U.S. Launching of cruise missiles or Russia's flying these planes, in the Arctic region or near Alaska. Things are connected. And if the Kremlin has, a consistent set of objectives and guidelines and principles that it's pursuing in the world over the last 4 to 5 years, The U.S., pretty much, it's very difficult to predict where we stand on anything or what we will do in response to anything. And while I don't, like Russia's foreign policy strategy, I certainly, I don't agree with it. I find it dangerous. They do, you do know what they're after. They're after expanding Russia's influence and where they can, undermining our influence. And so this is, you know, it's not a coincidence that these flights are happening now. I do think it's about gathering intelligence, gathering information, and sending a message consistently that Russia's here and we have to deal with it, and trying to, you know, perhaps they're trying to gain information that will help to, in their minds, give them some kind of understanding over what the current administration in Washington is about, and well, trying to learn what is it that they want and how does it behave, because that's, it's a dangerous world when that information is not shared. By
I guess so, but I mean, but we're not going to shoot at them. We're not going to drop bombs on them. We're not going to shoot those bombers or those reconnaissance planes out of the sky. I kind of just think this is, I mean, this is reassuring, or me reassuring myself. Tell me if this is right, Joel. All of this is posturing. That's fine. I can live with that. There's no real military threat here, right?
There's a military threat if there's a military type of problem that emerges between the U.S. and Russia. So there's several pieces of information. As tensions increase between the U.S. and Russia, Russia's military wants to fly whatever training or exercise missions that they fly, and we will fly ours. That is a marker of worsening relations.
I get that. I get that. But these flights per se.
On their own? No. It doesn't presage war. But, you know, but the problems in the Korean Peninsula could. And Russia is not going to stand by no matter how things are resolved in any major conflict area in the world. That they've made that abundantly clear. Mm. And so whether it's Korea or whether it's Iran, this is also partly Russia saying, you know, we need to be at the table on these big questions, and also trying to figure out how, you know, what is the U.S.'s level of attention, you know?
Well, I just can't understand
this. The way of getting it.
Okay, we're almost done with this conversation, so here's just another really naive question for me. I can't imagine Russia or anybody wanting to ally themselves with North Korea or Iran or, you know, or Assad. They're the bad guys. They do bad things. Why would you want? Why would you pick that horse, for crying out loud? If your real interest is world peace or world stability, why would you choose those characters?
Russia's interest is in steering questions in the world in terms of security, foreign policy, the global economy, even in directions that benefit Russia. And clearly Russia has benefited Russia's foreign policy interests through its actions in Syria. It's expanded its ability to sway outcomes in a direction that it would like to see them go, if only by undermining the United States or the EU's ability to sway outcomes the way they would like it to go.
I guess so.
That's a win for Russia, you know. I'm not saying they would ally or side themselves with North Korea, but by having a say in what happens there, that can only benefit Russia.
Joel Ostro is a guy who knows a little bit more about Russia than you and me, professor of political science at Benedictine University. I'll call you again, Joel. I always appreciate your time.
Oh, it's terrific. Thanks so much, Jim.
Say well. It's a 2:20, but still, this whole conversation does make me think about Dr. Strangelove. And there's one little scene in there that has to be played in a minute. A couple of texts here. This one from 630. Kathleen in Willowbrook says, so disappointed that Sarah Palin is not on this Russia thing. She could shoot them down from her porch. This one says, to respond to your comment about why does Russia associate with Syria and Iran, America has relations with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has human rights track record on a par with Iran, far worse than Syria. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the text. David wanted to jump here in here anyway. Hey, David, this is John.
Yes, John. First of all, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Second of all, I was going to tell your guest, the reason Russians are in Mediterranean and supporting Assad is because they want to have a permanent place on the warships right on the Mediterranean, just like Americans are thin fleet in Bahrain. That's the only reason, they're supporting Assad.
And what do you say about that?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I sure am.
Well, you were talking about why they're dealing with bad people.
Yeah.
Like Iran and Syria.
I guess you're saying that end justifies that means. That end justifies the means then, huh?
Yes. Of course.
Well, but I don't know that everybody agrees with you on that. That's why I asked that question, David. And what do you say to that? Because I think some people would say, well, I get that, but there's got to be a better or different way than supporting that guy.
But, John, nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the Russians want to be in the Mediterranean. They want to be there permanently, just like Americans are.
Yeah. I don't mind us being there, though. We're the good guys, David.
I know, but nobody talks about it. Nobody says why they're there.
I appreciate your phone call. Listen, you're right. If that's the objective, you're right. That does not get talked about a lot. And I appreciate you bringing it up. Okay, but just give me a second to do this, because when you talk about the United States planning on what to do with Russia, they've got nuclear weapons, we've got nuclear weapons. Does your brain go here?
If, on the other hand, we were to immediately launch an all-out and coordinated attack on all their airfields and missile bases, we'd stand a damn good chance of catching them with their pants down. Hell, we got a 5-to-1 missile superiority as it is. We could easily assign 3 missiles to every target and still have a very effective reserve force for any other contingency. An unofficial study, which we undertook of this eventuality, indicated that we would destroy 90% of their nuclear capabilities. We would therefore prevail and suffer only modest and acceptable civilian casualties from the remaining force, which would be badly damaged and uncoordinated.
General, it is the avowed policy of our country never to strike first with nuclear weapons.
Mr. President, it is necessary to choose between 2 admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One where you got 20 million people killed, and the other where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, tops, depending on the breaks.
I will not go down in history as the greatest mass murderer since Adolf Hitler.
Perhaps it might be better, Mr. President, if you were more concerned with the American people than with your image in the history books.
George C. Scott's so good in that. That movie Travels. Have you watched that lately, Bob? Have you gone
I
back?
I haven't, no.
I'm telling you, go back and watch that thing.
That one, and then there's Failsafe, which has a similar plot device in it. That one's dramatic.
Yeah, this one is both. This one is like scary dramatic. You go, it's kind of like that, but it's so dark and funny. That it's
all of Kubrick's movies.
It's fun to watch.
Have their own certain flavors, you know. They're also different.
You a Kubrick fan?
Oh, I love Stanley Kubrick. 2001 is my favorite.
That's the first movie I took my wife to. And if you ask Brenda today, go, what was the first movie? What was your first date with John? My wife will tell you. Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. They were showing 2001 on campus. We went to McDonald's. She had money. I did not. It's not like I wouldn't pay. I just didn't have any money back then. And then we went to the free movie 2001 A Space Odyssey. I thought that was a swell date. At the date, we sat down in the movie and the apes throw the bone in the air and Brenda went to sleep. If you ask her today, what is 2001 A Space Odyssey about? She will tell you, well, there's these monkeys and they're hitting some bones with some sticks. And that's all she's got for you on that movie.
Oh, she missed all the good stuff.
Because there's some stuff about space in there, too, and she's not too keen to that.
Not 2001, A Monkey Odyssey. I mean, it is, but there's more.
But there's more to it than that. The shorter version of our numbers in the news current events quiz comes your way in about 10 minutes or so, but let's spend that time with Jim Ryan. His book is Wait, What? And Life's Other Essential Questions. This book is just delightful. You may have first discovered him and some of his questions in a graduation speech he gave at Harvard that went viral. Everybody wants to go viral, Jim. So first of all, just congratulations for that.
Oh, thanks very much.
Actually, not and congratulations for going viral for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons.
Right. Yeah, Yeah, no, fair enough. I'm glad I wasn't doing something embarrassing that went viral.
What an intriguing title for a book, but it's one of the questions that we should all pause and ask. Tell me what these questions are generally. What do we expect to gain if we read your book?
Sure. So, you know, the speech itself that I gave at graduation last year was really about the importance of asking good questions. And the basic point I was trying to get across was we all spend an awful lot of time worrying about having the right answers and not enough time thinking about posing the right question. And instead of just talking in generalities, I thought it would be useful to identify five questions that I've asked throughout my life that have been of use to me. And those are, wait, what? I wonder, which could be paired with why or if. Couldn't we at least? How can I help? And what truly matters? And as I explained in the speech and then explained in more detail in the book, those questions are useful across a range of contexts. Just how useful, I didn't even appreciate until the speech went viral, and I started hearing from people all across the country from all walks of life writing me to tell me that the speech had been incredibly useful to them. I heard from students and teachers and parents and business executives and lawyers and judges and pastors. Yeah, I was really floored by the reaction, I have to say.
Was that based on the strength of the question, what, wait, what?
Well, I think that's, you know, that's the first question. I think each of the questions is useful in different ways. I think wait, what is catchy. It's a question that my kids ask all the time, and if you hang around with teenagers, you'll hear this question constantly asked. And it's an easy question to brush off as, you know, either annoying or asked by someone who's not paying attention. But what I like the most about it is the wait, which precedes the what, is a reminder to slow down and make sure that you understand what someone's saying. So this question's often asked, either if someone's not paying attention or if they don't understand what someone has just said. And I feel like, especially in today's world, we hardly spend any time listening to each other and trying to understand someone else's point of view before we instantly decide whether we agree or disagree. And if we disagree, we tend to dismiss the person and maybe even denigrate them as ignorant or evil or both. And so I think asking the question, wait, what, or reminding yourself to ask the question, wait, what, is a reminder to make sure that you actually take the time to listen to someone and try to understand their perspective. You may still disagree with them, but you're not likely to end up into in a huge fight.
Try wait, what, before you do the big eye roll or hit send. Say, wait, what?
Yeah.
I think it's empowering.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I also actually think that it's not a bad way if you're trying to persuade someone to change his or her mind. Asking a question like, wait, what? Asking someone to slow down to explain something before you disagree may be a way of prompting the person to reassess his or her views, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if someone says something and you instantly come out and say, God, you know, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard, a person's likely to just double down and dig in his heels and then end up in an argument. If you instead say, well, why do you think that? And what's that based on? And, you know, where does that come from? And you do it in, you know, not a threatening way. You might actually be able to get someone to change his mind. I saw this happen. I clerked at the Supreme Court right after I graduated from law school. And one of the best questioners I've ever seen was Justice Stevens, who's since retired. And he would probe lawyers in a really gentle and respectful way. But in doing so, he always revealed what the weak part of their case was, because he just kept asking them, well, why do you say, you know, B follows A? And how do you get from this point to that point? And it was a really effective way of illustrating where someone's argument was weak.
You know, I was never there, never heard anything like that, but I used to watch Columbo on TV, and as you were describing that in the book, I could see it was a Jim Garner just scratching his head going, well, yeah, but now wait a minute, wait, what?
Yes.
You know, if
right.
And really the power of that is the admission by the person asking it. Look, I'm sorry, I want to be there for you, but wait, what did you just say without, you know—
right.
judging them.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right.
And in the limited time we have, another anecdote you use to illustrate that is the story of, wasn't this the anecdote that goes with that question, was the story of the young man who was on a trip with you guys in the Netherlands or somewhere?
Oh yeah, this is a trip in Norway. Another reason why it's a good question to ask is it's a good question to get people to tell you their story. So this guy was from Japan, and long story short, we gave him a ride to see a fjord that he wanted to see. But his English was a little bit halting, and we didn't quite understand why he was going there. And he had an album with him, back when you had, albums. And on the cover was a picture of a fjord. And we got to the place, and he hopped out of the car, and he was holding up the album and looking at the fjord, and there was a mountain in the distance. And he was just scrambling and running from place to place, and we were looking at each other like, what is this guy doing? And finally he found the exact spot where the picture that was on the album cover was taken. And it was a symphony by Edvard Grieg, who was a Norwegian composer. And so my wife, Katie, basically asked him, wait, what? Why are you doing this? And he told us this incredible story about how he had grown up in a tiny apartment in Tokyo, had a very rough childhood, and his means of escape was listening to this symphony over and over again and staring at the cover because he thought this was the most beautiful place in the world. And he had finally, he'd saved up his entire life to go see this spot. And we saw him when he finally saw the spot that he'd been staring at in this tiny apartment in Tokyo all his life.
Yeah, a story.
And if we hadn't bothered to ask him, what's your story? We never would have heard it.
Yeah, it's just such a touching story. They could make a movie about that scene. How lucky for you all to share that.
I know. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for him and for us. I mean, I felt really lucky and privileged to be a part of it. I mean, he was incredibly moved, and it was an incredibly moving scene.
Wait, What? And Life's Other Essential Questions by James E. Ryan, Dean of Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Last thing, business applications, interpersonal applications. I don't know, this is maybe a great graduation gift for somebody. Who do you see as the perfect audience for this?
I do think that it would be a good present at graduation for sure. But given that I heard from people, like I was saying, from all walks of life, I think it's probably useful for a number of reasons and for a number of people. I mean, I heard some from business executives who told me that they organized a retreat around the questions. But I also heard from a lot of teachers who said that they had taken the questions and turned them into a poster that they hung on their classroom walls.
Hmm.
So it could be a question. It could be a gift that you get for a graduating student, but it could also be a gift that a graduating student gets for a favorite teacher, I think.
And it's not just platitudes. There's a lot of thought behind these. What truly matters? How can I help? Couldn't we at least ... Some of them are almost starter questions. Wait, yep. What is the lead on this? And it's well done. Nice to talk to you, Jim. I really appreciate your time, and thanks for sharing this wisdom.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Wait, What? Is literally the title of the book. Hey, I want to play Numbers in the News, our current events quiz. Call right now if you want to be in and play. We'll get an assist from, I think it's Judy in the newsroom. The number is 312-981-7200. Current events quiz, Numbers in the News. You listen to GN, so you're pretty smart. I'll bet you'll do well. We've got a couple questions for you. You call right now, 312-981-7200.
Numbers in the News.
Oh, yeah.
To play with numbers,
and there is no prize. Yeah.
Larry's going to play Numbers in the News for a few minutes here. Hi, Larry. How are you? You're on GN.
Hey, great. Welcome back to Chicago, John.
Nice of you to say, Larry. What are you doing this afternoon?
I'm just running around doing some shopping and picking up some stuff at Menards.
All right. You got a couple minutes to play the Numbers in the News current events quiz?
I think so.
How many goals did the Blackhawks score in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year? A, 3, or B, 13?
3.
That's correctamundo, I'm sorry to say. An Oak Brook couple is suing their local school district in a dispute over the local geography bee. I don't know if you saw this story. They had a geography bee. Some of the parents are upset about how that went. So they're suing their junior high for A, $95,000, or B, $5 million.
That was, I believe it was A.
He says A, $95 million, and $95 million is not right. Sorry about that. Here's question number three. She's People's Most Beautiful Woman this year for the fifth time. Who is People Magazine's Most Beautiful Woman? Is it Julia Roberts or Michelle Pfeiffer?
I didn't hear these say. Let's go with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Now, remember, if you're not completely sure of your answer, you can reach out to Judy Pilak for an assist in the newsroom.
I think you should reach out to me.
Oh, I'm going to reach out to Judy. I would reach out to Judy on that second one.
Too late for that. Judy, was it Julia Roberts or Michelle Pfeiffer?
Julia Roberts.
She says, you have to wait for him to agree, Aleph.
Sorry.
I agree.
Is this the debut? Because it sounds like it.
No, this is the fourth time, which is kind of unfortunate for all of us.
All right.
Bill O'Reilly's contract was to pay him how much per year? Was he going to get $8 million on that contract they tore up or $25 million a year?
$25.
$25 million is correct. In 2014, there were 45,000 tickets issued in Chicago for texting while driving. 45,000. That was in 2014. How many driving while texting tickets did they issue last year? A, 168, or B, 345,000?
168.
168. What's up with that? Larry, what's going on there?
I don't know. I think the police are on strike.
Sounds like it. They don't want to write those tickets, do they?
A little low morale thing, you know.
Man alive. Hey, they sold the first base bag from Game 7 of the World Series. How much did that go for? A, $2.5 million. B, $101,000.
B,
$101,000 is? Nicely done, sir. I'll give you one more. You ready? If the Cubs want to buy back one of those iconic rings like Judy Pilak's son has, how much will they pay for the ring to get it back? $1 or $10,000?
I'm going to go with Judy Pilak on this one.
Judy, what are they going to give your son for that ring?
$1.
$1 is all they're offering, and you have to pay. You have to give it back if they ask for it. Is it $1 or $10,000?
$1. I was listening to Judy earlier.
She's a smart lady, that Judy Pilak. Hey, Larry, nicely done, sir. But for one, you ran the table, sir.
All right. Thank you.
You know, we play for pride here on the John Williams Show. I have no prize for you. But really, if you had pizza or pride, which would you prefer?
I think I like the pizza.
I was afraid he was going to say that. Sorry,
I'll open the pride tomorrow.
Take care, Larry. Thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Have a good day. This is WGN. See what's coming your way now at 3 o'clock. Roll and Anna are in the studio. Hi, kids.
Thank you very much. We have a lot going on here. Now, there's some confusion. There is some confusion.
In your world or on?
Well, actually in Washington.
Okay.
Because earlier today it was announced that the president, he's been on the Twitter. He just can't put the thing down. And he's been talking about how he sees the next week going, and he thinks there's going to be a budget discussion starting.
A lot going to get done. He said that's good. Next week. Mm-hmm. Budget, healthcare potentially.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
Then he just got asked about it when he was leaving a government office down in Washington. And said, the next week doesn't matter, okay? What do you people keep saying next week? So that happened.
You mean, so on the one hand, he tweets, next week I'm going to get all this stuff done. Then they ask him about it, and he said, why are you asking me about that?
Right, exactly.
Kind of like that. Kind of exactly that.
Right. I think he thinks nobody sees his Twitter except for his followers, right? I mean, that's his voters. That's
maybe.
It.
You know what's fun is to go through the people that he's following, by the way. It's a very interesting list.
That is interesting.
It's 41 people, and one of them will blow your mind. I'll just leave it at that.
Huh.
41 people he follows. One of them is hilarious.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
A little project for your,
tease us
for
with
your
that.
Team. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to go take a look at that. Thank you very much. Well,
have
that's what
show.
We need, a Friday project.